The 1998 Salt Lake Sunstone Symposium presents Session 316, Journey in the Footsteps of Kenya's Black Missionaries, a paper by R. Dean Watts. The chair is Mark Worley. This is a 60-minute presentation taped on a 90-minute tape, so the second half of Side 2 will be blank.
For me, having been the first Sunstone Symposium that I had attended. And his also his enthusiasm and his excitement when he led the music, for those of you who went to last night's session, it's something that is truly unforgettable. So, let's, because of his enthusiasm, let's give him an enthusiastic welcome this morning.
Thank you. Can't ask for a better introduction than that. Thank you very much. I had planned initially to speak this morning about my experience in Africa. I've elected to invite these folks to speak for themselves. And that only became possible when they assigned me this slot on Saturday morning. The 11-day safari that I experienced through Kenya's magnificent game parks in company with a lifelong friend, John Goddard, whom many of you know, or at least know of, was all I hoped it to be, and even more. Nevertheless, after almost 2 weeks on the road in our 6-minibus caravan, I approached Nairobi with frustration, disappointment, and I was still slightly ill. The second leg of my Africa journey was really to have been a 1,000-mile journey into the highlands of southwest Tanzania with a friend, Bob Manier, who went there in 1993 as a Peace Corps teacher. And he describes it as paradise. But circumstances thwarted our getting together, and here I am at the moment of decision, the last night before everyone returns to the U.S., and through a chance meeting with a missionary couple serving in the mission headquarters of the Nairobi, Kenya Mission, who had connections to one of our tour group, and their subsequent generous offer for a clean, safe place for me to stay in Nairobi, doors opened for what was, without question, the peak experience of my Africa trip, and events which were to significantly affect my attitudes toward the missionary outreach of the LDS Church in general. I could not have imagined a visit to a small branch on the outskirts of Nairobi would trigger such intense spiritual feelings akin to the highs I remember as a missionary in New England mission conferences 50 years ago in company with that man, Armand Moss. Who indeed was, we were really brothers in our companionship. I attended at the invitation of this couple the branch president's meeting with his counselors and advisors, several other meetings. I contributed modestly during the priesthood meeting, and I accompanied the singing on a melodica, which I keep handy for just such occasions. I did the same in Sunday school, and I would say that the lessons in both of the meetings were probably superior to anything I've experienced recently in Salt Lake City. The three-hour block climaxed with a fast and testimony meeting, my eyes immediately filled with tears as testimonies were born that seemed to transcend the familiar formulas that we often hear. Perhaps most impressive of all was the African missionaries who were attending that branch as return missionaries. We do not have any single white missionaries in Kenya due to government policy. But as a result, a lot of young people, both men and women, have been called from the branches in Kenya and other East African countries to serve as 2 years full-time missionaries, and they attend the version of MTC at the mission home in Nairobi. Most of them are showed such poise, confidence, fluency in at least three languages, and their intense commitment to the gospel, to education, their desire to achieve and reach a quality of life for themselves and their future families was very impressive indeed. After the meeting, I approached a sister who had spoken so movingly about the challenges her family had to face in enabling their return missionary to come to Salt Lake City to attend LDS Business College. She was divorced, had raised four children, working full-time as a nurse, and I have invited her son, Morris, this man, to assist in this presentation. He's 22 and is accompanied by his roommate, Robert Kalo, who is 26, and Robert's younger brother, Robert Wambua, who is age 24. All three serve two-year missions for the church in Kenya. Morris has been here in the United States 4 months, and Robert the older and Robert the younger are in their second year in Utah. I had originally intended to tell you this morning of my trips off the beaten track accompanied by another return missionary, Elder Coroso, with whom I visited members and branches in the Chulu Hills and in Kilungu. But a kind spirit intervened, and you are the beneficiaries. So I am going to proceed immediately into the questions that I have prepared for them to answer, and when I finish, you're welcome to have at them. By way of introduction, the first East African saints were baptized about 12 years ago. So the context is a short history. Today, the church population in Kenya is somewhere over 1,000. There are five branches in an area just southeast of Nairobi, and that was the area I visited and to which Morris has his connection, a very direct connection. And I personally observed life in the villages and in some of the branches in those areas. I was extremely impressed by a number of things. First of all, LDS Charities projects. That is, there were a number of projects which had been instituted and realized under church direction. A distinguished Indian lady whom I met during the journey from Amsterdam to Nairobi told of her project to establish schools for students who did not qualify to go on to high school. The kicker was that the LDS Church Charities had contributed 150,000 books to her schools, and she wept as she told about that, and I wept when I heard it. She was Baptist. I visited the Ntongoni branch, where several acres of grounds within the church compound was divided into individual garden plots for families of church members. Dozens of members were working in their gardens that day, which happened to be a market day. Just outside the compound was a deep well with a diesel pump from which crystal clear water flowed constantly, with a lineup of villagers with 5-liter cans, filling them and carrying them back to their homes. The same day, in a different village, I visited an elementary school which had brick his and hers latrines, also courtesy of LDS Charities. My hosts in Nairobi were a missionary couple from Utah County whose mission assignment was to conduct employment preparation classes for return missionaries and others who needed job skills to help them hurdle the up to 70% unemployment rate said to prevail in Kenya. And all three of them have been in those employment preparation classes, and including Morris, I think, under the Shumways, who were my hosts. My visit with missionaries and members convinced me that the influence of the church in the quality of life of its members is incalculable in East Africa. The powerful spiritual message of the church dovetails nicely with African traditional religion, which I studied during spare moments. I was given very good advice that I was not to go outside the compound after dark. No missionaries do. And during that time, I had time to read a few books. I appreciated the church's proactive stance in addressing the challenges of everyday life, in addition to matters that related more to eternity. And they resonated with me very strongly with the notion of pure religion and undefiled before God. I came back with my spirit soaring. So, I invite my brothers to join me at the pulpit and respond to some questions that I've prepared. And if you think I've missed something, you're welcome to interrupt. Please come up. Why don't you come over here, Morris, and Robert the older, and Robert the younger, and I will let them kind of mix it. This is informal, but I really don't know what they're going to say. Into the mic. So, first of all, give us a brief introduction of your families, the environment where you lived and grew up, and how you came to be Latter-day Saints. Go.
Okay. Well, my name is Morris, just as Brother Dinas told you, and I come from a family of four kids. I have three sisters.
The microphone.
I have three sisters, and I'm the only son, and I'm the firstborn. And my parents, they are separated, and I live with my mom. I've been a member for 7 years now, and I've lived in Nairobi all my life. Nairobi is the capital city of Kenya. Just a short introduction about myself.
Go ahead.
I guess the anger should go first.
My name is Robert Nzibo, and we're also from Kenya, as he told you. I lived in different parts of the country. As you all know, Kenya is in the eastern part of Africa, neighboring Tanzania, Uganda, and Ethiopia, and some part of Indian Ocean. But anyway, I lived in Mombasa, which is fine, and also I lived in Taveta, Voi, and some other parts of Central. I come from a family of seven, including my parents, that is. We had three boys and one sister. And unfortunately, one of our brother passed away just before we got here. We came to America. Let's see.
How did you come to be LDS, and where was your mission?
I came to be an LDS at a little place called Darajani. That's in the central part of the country. And the missionaries were introduced to my family by our neighbor. I can't just ever forget that experience, because the first time to see a man and his wife dedicated to teach the gospel. And I can remember, it's all clear in the mind, how they were seated in that bench outside our house, teaching principles of the gospel one after another. I never got converted right there and then, so was my family. But some of the things that they were teaching, they stuck to our minds such that we wanted to investigate more. I remember so clearly, this was back in 1991. These couples, they were from Independence, Missouri. And I can just remember them teaching eternal progression. You know, they flip the cliff chart and they show where we came from, where we are, and where we're going. That thing stuck in our minds. It was just true. We didn't know why it was true, but we knew there was something to investigate more about those missionaries. Anyway, after two months while visiting with the missionaries, they invited me to get baptized. So I was the first person in the whole family to be baptized. My brother was in Nairobi those days. And so I got baptized. A year later, I was prepared to go on mission. And that's where I got converted in the church. I went on my mission in Uganda, which I said part of East Africa, which is neighboring Kenya. And of course, it's an English-speaking mission, but I had to learn some Luganda too, so I speak Luganda on top of my vernacular language. Uganda is a little more better, doing better in the church than Kenya in terms of membership. There's so many members there, and many people are willing to listen to the missionaries. They are kind. There have been wars, if you have kept track of the history of East Africa. And so the people are very humble to the ground or so. And I was privileged to be a missionary in Kampala, Jinja, Mukono, and another little place they call Walukuba. I was privileged also to pair with North American companions, maybe some of your children's. Anyways, and those missionaries were sharp. They usually, back then, this is 1993, they pair African with an American missionary, because most of the time we didn't go on MTC. We just had a little training there in the mission home. And then when we pair with North American elders, because they've been in the church for a long time, and they pass through the MTC, so, you know, they teach us and we teach them little things. But I had some companions from Idaho, you know, Utah and Seattle, Canada and all those places. And that's how I got converted in the church. Because before I taught those principles that we were teaching, I had to learn them by myself first. And as I learned, I studied hard. We taught to read the Book of Mormon 30 minutes every day. I did that. Read the scriptures, compare them with the Bible. And that's how I fully got converted in the church. I'm still learning. I'm converted in a very unique way. I gather principles, one principle from another, and then I try to put it together, and that's how I got converted. Well, I guess my brother will tell you the rest.
Yeah. Me too, I'm still in the process of being converted. Conversion does not come overnight. Take a long time to know more about the gospel. Our parents, Charles Robert Nzibu is my name. And our parents are teachers. They teach elementary school. And I spent most of my life with my brother. We went to boarding school from elementary to high school. It's kind of amazing. We went to the mission field the same time. And we are here the same time. It was kind of hard first when I heard about the church, you know. As another person, in Africa asks, now you are telling about the Book of Mormon. You just know about the Bible. Why do you need the Book of Mormon? So it took a while, you know, to read the Book of Mormon, understand it, ponder about it, pray about it, and I come to know it's a word of God. One of the challenges we got most, especially for me when I learned most when I was in the mission field. I served 1 year in Kenya, Nairobi, and the other year I went to Tanzania, Dar es Salaam. And in Dar es Salaam, most of the people there, they don't speak English, they speak Swahili. And it's a little bit hard to teach the gospel in Swahili. I can say Swahili has no spirit. Because after you present the discussion, you ask somebody, so what do you feel about what we talk about? They'll say, fine, you know. And maybe you're expecting to say something, I feel, you know, you describe the feelings about the gospel. And somebody say, fine, you just feel that, what I teach. So it was kind of challenging. And apart from being challenged of new things to learn to wake up early in the morning, have companionship study with your companion, have personal study the scriptures, learn the gospel of Jesus Christ. We also have the family challenges, you know, like when we become the members of the church, we have some relatives who went to school in America, another in Canada and Europe. And when they heard that we are LDS, they not like the idea so much. So they just kind of isolate us, you know. They don't socialize us so much. I remember in Nairobi, my aunt could not let me go in her house, you know, with my roommate, because she had heard a weird things about, you know, she had a weird thinking about our church, of which was not true. What else can I say?
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Let's go on. I want to go into another area now, and that is a more personal one. How, indeed, what were your attitudes toward things like marriage and getting employment and education after your missions? That is, what were your prospects like?
Well, you know, well, I'm so grateful that I was privileged to serve a mission. I think it's just a privilege. I think every young man, you know, in the church should serve a mission. And that is because of the, you know, the many things I got for my mission. One, before I went on a mission, I was a very shy guy, you know, and I wasn't really aggressive. And that's something I gained on my mission. You know, I came to get to know the gospel, you know, the truthfulness of the gospel for myself. And, you know, by just going out and teaching, praying every day, you know, your every day of your, you know, of your mission is centered to the gospel. And so I got a testimony. I gathered confidence. You know, I couldn't speak to, like I'm speaking now. I wouldn't do it before. And, you know, my mission has made me to, you know, to be aggressive, you know, to want, you know, to get more education, you know, to know that, you know, I have a potential of, you know, being, you know, I have a high potential, okay, and I can reach my potential. You know, that's the thing I learned from my mission. And before I went on my mission, I was just done with school, and I was really sick with school. I didn't want to go back to school, but my mission really changed that completely. You know, now I want to get education. I want to, you know, get the most education that I can get. You know, I want to get married, get started with life. I want to be a family man, and you know, these are just things I go for my mission.
When you get home from mission, it's kind of hard to decide what you want to do. When I got home, I stayed in Nairobi for a while, trying to think if I should be a businessman, go to a little school there, and just be a teacher like my parents. But that didn't work. I tried to work for my cousin, too, who has some tattoos in Nairobi there as a money collector. That one didn't work either. And so I thought of coming to get good education in America. And my parents, they both supported the idea. And so I chose to go to LDS Business College to go get some background so I can go to University of Utah. And had I not gone on mission, I would never know where Utah is. You know, you're in Africa and... And you won't even know what Salt Lake, I mean, LDS Business College or University of Utah is. And so this is opportunities which have been helping on my side just because of learning to go on mission and meeting with people on mission. I had companions from here in Salt Lake, and they tell me how wonderful Salt Lake is, and that got me interested. And so I ended up coming here by myself and see how it is. My goals, I like to go to school, get best education like Maury said, and go back to my country and go help others so they can get same opportunity or they can do much better. And so my long-term goals now is to go to the University of Utah, which I'm working on it now. I let my brother speak the rest.
I don't know where I'm going to start from. Is when I was in the mission and I had no meet, like, you know, like people who are really opposed about the church. And I had no testimony, and I just relied on faith, you know. And I was very little by that time. And my shirt used to be, you know, like a huge collar, and the ties coming down this way. And I'm just grateful for the American companions who were really patient. They prepared me first to, you know, like become committed, wake up in the morning, our personal study of the scriptures, and then companionship study. And this day, we were having an appointment to teach this professor. It's called Professor... I'm forgetting the name. It's a long time. He's a professor of University of Nairobi. And we are getting there, and we found that immediately we got to teach the gospel to this person. this person also bring the anti-Mormon literature to this family, and they never read something like that before. And we are sitting there, and my companion had more testimony, I can say that, than I did. So what I was to say like a silent prayer, you know, inspire, ask even Father to inspire us, you know what you're going to tell this person, because I had no idea what to tell this person. And then this professor I see there, I say, you know what, elders, it means that you come to teach us the gospel here, that this person normally passed this anti-Mormon literature here, and I read it, and I got it here. My senior companion say, hey, can I have the magazine? Say, yeah. He brought it, and then he started reading about the Mormons spread in Africa. They called the cult. I never had, that was a vocabulary to me, you know. Then he asked, what is a cult, you know? I don't know that. And then he started reading. We asked him to read loud so that we may understand, you know, what is the magazine talking about. He said the LDS is making the young people work hard, improve their lives, pay tithing. And then we asked him, what's wrong with that? You know what our investigator said? The people who wrote this are malicious, you know. And then now we start now talking about the tithing, of which you guys, you know what is tithing. And most of the churches there, they don't pay tithing. We have a nice building, and the people say, you go into the rich people's church. Rich people's church, they don't know how we get to build the chapels. That comes from the 10% of the faithful church members to contribute for the construction of the chapels. Because most of the people there are used to going to the, you know, they have that mentality like, we don't have to pay much tithing. We can build a small shelter, you know, small shelter to go worship there. And when we build a beautiful, nice, clean-looking chapel, they think that we go to worship the rich God. So that was kind of experience I learned. And from there, I started to grow up. I'm still growing up day after day. And it's kind of, you know, when we accept the gospel, we live it. Heavenly Father also bless us with the knowledge. Learn to know to do good things every day. Learn to appreciate every person the way they are. And even you get to appreciate the families. One thing I never realized very much is Heavenly Father will always make people to be brothers and sisters. You know, the real brother, like he's my brother. Do I choose him to be my brother? And sometimes it's my responsibility to choose who are my friends. Have I ever wondered, wow, how that happened, you know? I choose him to be my brother. There are some of the things we go deep in the gospel of which actually they are not taught, you know, in a church, like the way we live with Heavenly Father before we came. I know you guys, you know all these things. But anyway, that's how I started to see things and open my understanding of the gospel. There are challenges we face. Because after mission, you used to live like higher spiritual level. And after mission, you find that our parents, they have been working for 35 years. You know, my dad, 35, my mom, 35, 70 years. And they have nothing. They are not so rich. We are just poor. And after the mission, you find that they're going to retire like in 3 years. There's no money. The money situation in the country is very, you know, very tight. We go to school, universities there. There's no job. You have to bribe somebody to get a job. And then you get a challenge. What are you going to do next? It's another trial. Pray hard. Even if Father answer your prayers, you get opportunity to go to university in America, probably to get a good job and go help the people also become good. I have so many wonderful experiences about the gospel. The gospel in Africa is growing very, very depending with the like in Kenya, it's a little bit reluctant. In Uganda, as he said, people, they are serving the gospel there because already some people are prepared. By the way, in Kenya, we have like over 600 churches. And every church is preaching is the true church, you know. And like in Salt Lake, you go to the streets of Nairobi, all the preacher there and the pastor, they are preaching. They're preaching, you know. And some of the people there, they want money. They go to preach there so they may get money, you know. And there are those people there in Africa who are really looking the true gospel. And when they get confronted in the gospel, they just stay there because they just want to continue being good, feeling good. Yeah.
Thank you. I want to change the discussion a little bit and have each of them respond briefly on how the lives of LDS church members differs from the lives of non-LDS people living in the same environment. Go for it.
Well, as what I can generally say about Kenyans, we, you know, we are brought up. Even before I was a member of the church, we are brought up knowing, you know, it's good to be in, to go to church and all that. You feel guilty if you don't go to church. So we, most people, they are very religious people. But, you know, when we come to the gospel as taught by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, you know, there are principles that you never find anywhere else. You know, like for me, I never heard of, you know, pre-existence before I met the missionaries. And, you know, like baptism for the dead and, you know, like the Book of Mormon. These are new things to us. And so they, you know, things like this, they have a big impact on members. They make us different from the people in our communities. Like the word of wisdom, you know, back home, Kenya is our major foreign exchange. We sell a lot of coffee and tea. You know, we produce a lot of that. So you would imagine, you know, what impact it has on the people. You know, many people, they drink tea and coffee. That's a big difference. And also, because our same moral standards, you know, most of the people, we are different. You know, we're just different from other people. And also,
that's fine.
That should do. I hope it does.
Anything to add to that, either of you?
Can I go ahead?
Go ahead.
Yeah, actually, just briefly, if I compare myself with the people who went with the same high school, graduated the same time high school, because they still write to us. And they are not LDS. I'm LDS, a retired missionary. I can see the difference. One thing, most of the LDS retired missionaries in Africa, we learn is commitment. Commitment, learn to be committed to the church, the gospel, to your personal goal. We may be having different goals, like going to become businessman, school, achieve your potential, the more you say. But that's the most different thing we have. Commitment, the gospel, and the life, improve the life, become better.
Thank you. Do you want to do this? Or
Good. I'll just say the main difference between the LDS and non-LDS in Africa, actually, where I'm from, Darajani, is a question of happiness. I can just relate to our immediate neighbors who live around us. They do wrong things and you feel bad. You don't feel good. And the other people who are healthiest, they pay tithing, obey commandments, and they feel good. You see them feel good. And even you can see their healthy countenances and in every way they do. So that's the difference I see with them.
I'm sure that you have had very different experiences here in America, even in the short time you've been here. I'd like you to comment about the impact of going to the temple here, and number two, have you experienced any racial prejudice in the church in Salt Lake City?
No, here, back home, we don't have a temple close to us. The closest temple to us is the one in Johannesburg in South Africa, which is like probably 6 hours flight. And not many people have the money to to go to South Africa. And also, if you can make it by road, it will take you like probably 4 days. And so not many people get to go to the temple. I went on a mission, and I didn't go to a temple as, young men. Before you would do that before you go on a mission here. And so when I got here to the States, that's the first thing I wanted to do, is to go to the temple. I had thought about the temple for 2 years, and I wanted to experience those things for myself, And, the temple was, it's just a wonderful feeling, the way it feels being inside the temple. When I first drove, I was coming from the airport when I just landed in Salt Lake, and we passed by the temple. I saw Angel Moroni. I was like, this is a dream. I've always seen, the temple on pictures and all that, but, it was happening to my life. The temple it was just beautiful. It was at night. It was all lighted, and I'm so grateful that I've got to go to the temple. It has really had a great impact on me, on my spiritual life. I learned so many things there. There are so many things yet to learn, and I take every opportunity I have to go back to the temple every now and then. And
what was the other one?
What has been your experience with racial prejudice, if any?
Oh, as for me, I think the people here in Salt Lake, they are great. I love you people. Like in the ward we go to, everybody is there. They smile at us. They hug us, give us hugs. They want to shake our hands. We just feel at home. We feel, the brotherhood, the sisterhood. And I just look forward to Sundays and also at school. I like the environment of the business college. Most of the people there, they are saints. So they, it's just one big family. It doesn't feel different from, back home. So I haven't experienced any of that.
On my mission, I never thought a lot about the temple. I never studied a lot about the temple, because many people would not really understand until they go there and have their own experiences. And so I'm learning so much by going to the temple. I plan to go like every month, but I still can't comprehend the things there. And it's a good opportunity for me to learn how to live celestial life, obey all the commandments, and if possible, just live by the Spirit all the time. And you people, I would say Americans have opportunities to be closer to God, Almighty God, than any other people of the world, because you have temples, you have places where you can go commune with the Lord, go there and feel peaceful, go there and feel the Spirit, and learn how you can be more better, be like Heavenly Father. And so I really like the experience of going to the temple here. I've been here for almost 2 years now, and I would say I've never felt any racial difference or some racial negative thoughts or some people being... And just people are good. This is a good place. What else can I say?
Yeah. And if you take those people who say that the Mormons are not Christian, and you take them to the temple square there, and if they are like open-minded, they can feel the peace within the Temple Square. I've experienced that. And if you're an LDS and you have the temple recommend and you get inside the temple, you know why we have the Holy Spirit, because you know we may all look different, we may have different hair texture, different hair, eye shapes, different complexion, but when we are there, we are all the same, and you see the happy people inside there. You feel good, and you feel we are all children of Heaven Father. When you're inside the temple, you cannot even have like feeling like somebody's doing prejudice. No, you feel good. I've experienced that. I've firsthand experience because I've been there several times, and not only Salt Lake Temple, even St. George where I got my endowment. And when you talk about, I never thought much about racial prejudice, is that what I call it? I never thought about it when I was in Africa, because I never think about it. But one thing I come to learn, as I told you earlier on, I learn every day. As I come here, I've learned something different also. I've learned people are people, and the prejudice can be from either minority to majority or majority to minority. There are some black folks who are very prejudiced too, and there are some white people who are very prejudiced too. Different who you are dealing with, people are people. We have some good people here, and we have, it's just wonderful to be here. Yeah.
I would like to ask my friends to comment on the issue of tradition versus progress, in a way. That is, that tension exists. I suspect that just the wearing of this tie represents that problem, in a way, because this Maasai shield suggests that the flag, even the flag of modern Kenya, focuses on what is interpreted to be traditional and even primitive aspects of life in Africa, whereas many people in contemporary Kenya do not care for these symbols and would prefer that Kenya be known as a progressive and more westernized place. I would just like each of you to comment a little bit on how you have felt that tension, because both things can be seen side by side in Kenya today.
Yeah, that's another thing I never thought about the shield here. About the Maasai, as you see that a shell with a spear, and well, this Maasai, probably most of you don't know who are Maasai. These are the group of the African. They are very skinny and very tall. They can sing, they can jump. They resisted the Western culture. They call the white man culture. Okay, let's be open about this. Okay, and when we were having like long time ago, when the people were coming to take the slaves in Africa, the Maasai resisted. I wish I have like something I can draw. There are several things that meant not many people to be taken from Kenya. One was the animal, lion, man-eater. And the other one was the Maasai people. Maasai, they resisted the Arabs from getting interior to Kenya to get people for slaves. And from that experience, I think made them to be wild. They are really wild. They don't wear clothes like we wear. They they pierce, they pull, what do you call the thing they put in their ears? Yeah, they play their hair. And they live in the jungle with the heads of cattle. And I say, don't tell him about he go to school, get the degree, and he go back to give the cattle. He talks in terms of the cattle. And when he wants to marry, he's 18, that's when he gets circumcised. And that's why he has to look for a lady to get married. And to prove that he's brave and is responsible enough for a family or a warrior, he has to go to the jungle, kill a lion by himself, and then you take the tail to the girl. You know, say, here in America, you take the flowers and a diamond. And a diamond. And a diamond. And this man, you take a tail there and a spear, and this is how he works like. Yeah, he go there and put it there, and then she accept him, and he get married. How do they kill the lion? There are several ways they kill the lion. One, you take the piece of wood, they sharp the both sides, you know, look sharp, like the toothpick there, the toothpick look like. And then he has a shed now, you see there, and he has a spear, and he go there, he start, you know, looking where the lion is. And then the lion jump, you know, open the mouth wide, jump to attack him, and he's got a shield now, and you take the piece of wood, between the mouth, you know, the lion like that. So one part will stick down and down on top. Lion open the mouth like that one, cannot tear him to pieces, and then that's now you take the opportunity to stab it with the spear and kill it. Or other way you can kill the lion is like he go kill a cow and he put in a bush and he take a spears, you know. And when the lion now jump, it will jump on the spears and get killed. Sometimes when they are in the jungle, they are very strong. Sometimes when they are in jungle and they are starving, there's no food, there's no McDonald's there in Africa. What they do is they get the bull, the biggest bull, get in the horns, you wrestle with it, put it down, cut here, you suck the blood, and you continue surviving. And this is the issue I'm talking about. This one is there are two things here. There's African culture and there's the Western culture, or which Western culture as what we call the system of the government, which African they have come to understand about it. And we have the religious point of view, of which 60% of Kenyans, they are Christian. And now that's the shade there. And we have a big, big thing coming there. I don't know. What I think, I don't know what everybody thinks here about it is, the African, in school, we are taught that, and I know you guys, you teach that, another culture that is not American culture is the culture of the poor. In the African school, we are taught that you watch out about the Western culture, because the Western culture teaches people to be selfish, mean, think more material terms. And I think that's what I try to show. Don't forget to be brotherhood, don't forget to be who you are. We have the freedom to worship, go to church. We believe in Jesus Christ. And the thing is, we are told that don't forget to be, you know, like brotherhood thing. When I say the brotherhood, I want to make this one very clear. The people who especially people who become very educated in Africa, they have a tendency like they isolate the other family members. You know, you cannot come to my place and you cannot eat. And that is common here in America. If you want to come to my house, you have to give me a call. Such a time I have to come there and eat, okay? But in Africa, anytime, no call, no what, you see your relative come, you see your cousin come, you see your friends come in your house, they get seated there. And of course, they need to eat. And I think that's dumb too. It makes people not work hard. So that's why I try to teach people to not to be too materialistic. believe in God, but don't be too materialistic. I don't know whether I answered the question correctly.
We have only a couple of minutes each for you two to answer to that question a little bit, okay? And I must say that I have been the beneficiary of that kind of hospitality that he just talked about. I have sat at a table in a little compound of round thatched huts that represent the shamba or garden area, and have eaten the maize and beans with the a wonderful LDS family there, and I must say that the hospitality is palpable. That is, it is so open, so friendly, so relaxed, so patient, so gentle, so full of good humor. You can't imagine. Take a couple of minutes for a closing shot. Anything you like.
Okay. Well, you know, what I'm so grateful about the gospel is, or the church is, it doesn't really, you know, tell us to get rid of our traditions. You know, we're told to keep the good part of our traditions, and those which are against the gospel or which are contrary to the gospel, we do away with them. And there are many African traditions that, you know, I really appreciate, and they are really according to the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so, you know, I love my traditions, you know, and I intend to keep the good traditions. And, you know, even back home, that's something we are taught in school. You know, even though we get the education, you get this westernized, you shouldn't forget, you know, the traditions. You know, you shouldn't forget your roots, you know. You shouldn't forget, you know, what your grandparents did, you know, your ancestors did. Just like you wouldn't want your kids or, you know, you wouldn't want them to forget your family traditions. You know, that's the same with us. But I think, you know, being westernized, it has been a great advantage to us, because we have facilities now. You know, Nairobi is just like Salt Lake, you know, all the facilities you'd get here in Salt Lake, we have them there. And you know, we want to be with the world, you know. We want to be there, you know, with the, we want to develop and become, you know, like America. You know, that's a goal. And at the same time, we don't want to forget our traditions. I think that's a very important part.
Thank you. Robert?
I'll just be very brief. I think everybody brings their own traditions in the church, whether you're in Africa or Canada or America. But the only thing is to put a limit to them. I'm not going to say Maasai's are right either, because it's kind of bad to not have education. You can never go teach a Maasai anything. And so it's kind of hard to even know who God is, to even know who you were, if you don't study, if you don't go to school. And I think it's good to balance them. I'm glad that I know what my traditions are and what the other traditions I learned from other people like Western, and then how to balance them in the church. And I would say, I feel everybody has a way of expressing their service. In America, you smile, you hug, you talk good. At least you say hi to everybody. And you'd be amazed when you go to a place like Uganda. I'll mention Uganda briefly because I was there on my mission. And the people there are wonderful. We'll be teaching discussions, and then you get thirsty. And usually, if you ask for a drink, they have passions. They'll go make a passion fruit juice. And the woman will bring it in a tray. And I'm 19 years old, but then this woman, she was like 40 years. they kneel down. They believe in service. They'll kneel down and they present it to you. And I'm feeling bad because, you know, I'm not worthy of someone kneeling down to me. And that's the culture there. And so people have their own different ways of expressing their appreciation, their love, and their culture. And I say we can just balance them and do them right.
I want to thank my brothers sitting behind me for really articulating my trip to Africa much better than I ever could have done by myself. Thank you, and thank all of you for your patience.